the restoration of water quality functions in an urban riparian stream complex.
Okay, what I'd like to present today is some work. We started this project actually in 1999, and essentially this is part of the university, Duke University's campus. We own about 8,500 acres of forest land on the edge of Durham. And in 2007, Duke actually dedicated something called swamp. Our provost said he dedicated buildings, he dedicated football stadiums, but never a swamp. It's called the Stream Wetlands Assessment Management Park, and so the university has been putting some monies into this. Our goals of this have been to restore the connectivity between stream, channel, and riparian floodplain, create functioning wetland area and stream areas, mitigate some impacts from urban runoff, which I'll talk about today, and implement some strategies for species management, which I will not talk much about today. So this area, if you look at this area, basically in North Carolina, it's wholly within the Cape Fear water drainage, which is the only drainage system in, it's wholly within North Carolina. We have many big rivers, but this one starts and finishes in North Carolina, and we're here in Durham County, North Carolina. This area is an urban system. It's about 1,300 plus acres. This is partly forested, but most of this is part of the city of Durham. And we will be discussing the lower portion of this. All of this is the watershed that runs into this area. It's about 21% impervious surface, so a lot of flash runoff. And this actually is a piece of that lower area I showed you in pink. This is actually the Duke campus, and this part of the campus runs into this, and you'll see this tiny little area, which is about 24 acres down here. This is actually swamp. It sort of looks overwhelming compared to how much it's supposed to be treating for the whole system. So the issues and why we got money, this project has been over the 10-year period is about $2.5 million, mostly from state funding and about $500,000 from Duke. And essentially it's been put in place. The state really isn't interested in giving any money to Duke, but they are very interested in the fact that this Sandy Creek runoff system, which flows through Durham, runs directly into Jordan Reservoir, which is a drinking reservoir, which has excess fecal coliforms, sediments, nutrient loads, and a number of other things. And so it's on the 303D list, so the state is very concerned. So there are a lot of inputs. Everything, here's a typical example. Like you imagine urban systems, there are a lot of these pipes that run into the main creek. They're all over almost all cities we have. Here's a sewer line. Here's a degraded piece of the Sandy Creek. It has two branches. You can see here fertilizers and runoff and occasionally a sewer overflow. We have everything here, petroleum products and metals, which I won't talk about today, except we do have some mercury contamination. We're trying to figure out where it's coming from. So let's take a look at what this restoration was, and this will be the rest of the talk. There are four phases. Phase one is a stream, almost 3,000 feet of stream restoration configuration. These are the sampling stations. These sampling stations essentially are where we collect water quality and sediment. Phase two is a dam impoundment area. Phase three is actually a treatment wetland. And phase four is a new restoration we just finished that we don't have much data on, but it's part of the system. So let's take a look quickly what it looks like, and I'll go through some pictures quickly. So in 1999, we started the idea. We finally got money in 2003. This is what some of the streams look like, typical urban system. 8 to 10 foot incision into the stream. This is when we have storms. Just a huge storm comes through. This will fill up with water up to this bank area. It's basically eating its way to China. The restoration. So if you take a look at that, that stream was actually buried. And here you can actually see what it looks like. And this is a totally new configured stream with a flow system here for aeration. So it's got pools and riffles. This is a tree that fell over in the forested area. That was a piece of phase one. Phase two, I told you, was a reservoir. It originally was partly forested. People were a little upset. We took part of this forest out. The creek runs right through here. And this is what it looked like in 2007 when it went in. This is what it looks like in 2009. And this is what it looked like this last summer when it's fully been vegetated with wetland vegetation. All this 3,000 feet runs into this system before it runs downstream through this weird system. So we can do a complete budget. Phase three, and the reason I'm going through these phases is you're going to see all the data that follows results relate to these phases. So phase three actually is off the football stadium and all the athletic fields, which is the highest polluted water we have coming out of Durham's system. all those football fields, all those lacrosse fields, they pour the fertilizers and herbicides and everything to them. So this actually system started this way. There's a pipe behind here. This is set up as a low-flow system through here. EPA would not allow us to put a wetland online, so we call it offline. So then we built this plunge pool here, and then essentially you can see low flow. It goes down through here. We have since replaced this with a wing walls of weirs, and you can see a series of three cells that were put in here, and there they are as of a year ago. These are the cells now with wetland vegetation. So this is our treatment system. Under high flows, the water basically goes over this. I'm sorry, I don't have a picture of this, and it flows into these cells, and each cell is connected, and there's a flume at the end of this. So, first thing up, did we actually have any results after putting all these things in? The first thing is groundwater functions. Do we actually connect the wetland to the stream, and did it make any difference in terms of this? Did we restore it? Would this actually improve water quality? And would these conditions be conducive to produce a wetland and have any functions? And all I want to show you is this. We have a whole series of piezometers set up. The creek is back here. And I'll show you that, in fact, we started in 01. This is rainfall. And this is groundwater level. And this is the 30 centimeters that technically would be the legal definition of a wetland. This is the surface. You can see most of the time it's not functioning as a wetland. The water table is 2 to 3 feet below the surface. We restored it here, and you start to see this picture. And if you go and look at some of the, we've got about 40 wells in here now. Here's what we call a high marsh that's back about 40 meters from the stream. And you can see here in March of 2008, here's the surface, that essentially during the growing season, we're maintaining water pretty much to the surface. So hydrologically, we've got the wetland connected to the overflow stream. So now let's look at, does this stream and wetland complex actually improve any water quality? Lots of restorations around the country, lots of systems, almost virtually, it was a paper in Science a few years ago, 85% of all the $2 billion worth of restorations, there's no monitoring data been allowed by most states and most agencies. Only they've been built, but nobody's had any money to look at them. So nobody knows whether they're working or not. And it's $2 billion plus dollars. So this one is a highly instrumented one. It's one of the reasons we got some money. Just published this in 2011 in Ecological Engineering, and I'll highlight some of the features. So let's take a look at, say, just ambient total phosphorus. So here's the main input. We're running about 377 micrograms per liter coming in, and it changes up and down the stream here depending on what these tributaries do, what runoff is. Look at the football field, 741 micrograms. This is high phosphorus load, football stadium, and all the fields set up here. We go down the stream, and here's our dam system down here at the bottom, and we actually end up with about half of the concentration of phosphorus. These are delta diagrams, and basically this is the essence of the talk. What we now do over several years is look at the difference between the input and the output, and look at this, and if there's no change in the input-output concentration, you basically be at zero. So here is the pre-sampling. Here was after phase one, which is a stream. Here is after phase two, which was the reservoir. And here is after three, the treatment wetland in. And what you see is these phases of this are really important in that whole watershed. We virtually didn't have much of an impact with just phase one or phase two. But after we got the treatment wetland in, and all of those phases were now working, we now have, you can see, a significant reduction in terms of concentration for, let's say, phosphorus. If you look at fecal coliforms, again, this is what you need to look at, again, are by color-coded, pre-phase 1, 2, 3. Phase 4 is in, but we don't have data. It just finished finished last year. But all you have to look at, here's fecal coliforms, here's the state standard. Here's phase one. We're starting at the top. Here's the downflow, outflow system. These are sort of reference systems in the region. And you can see the bars go way above, and then phase one goes in place, phase two, phase three. That they're all basically, once those phases are in and all operational, we're starting to see an effect. So a lot of times people are only just doing a 3,000-foot, say, stream reach and say, ooh, we didn't seem to have any effect. Well, you have to do enough in the system to take care of this. We go back and look at, say, something like total nitrogen. You can see, again, there is a drop as we keep adding more phases, nitrate, nitrate. Ammonia goes up a little bit, but not really significant. It had to do some with the rainfall patterns and some of the materials. But basically, the total N is going down once the three phases were in. We're kind of anxious to see what's happening with phase four. Now, one of the interesting things with nitrate and nitrite drops, we went into the high floodplain, the low floodplain, and here's a control to see might the denitrification on those floodplains, now that they're flooded, make a difference. And it turns out that the lower, we created a terrace of two levels. Here is the highest floodplain. You have this denitrification rate. Here you can see that the control areas, which are a reference system, and this are virtually the same. But essentially, once we got that flooded, we're getting a higher rate of denitrification. So now we can put it on a mass balance basis and finish up sort of the picture. This is for a series of storms, and this is the nitrate-nitrite load. So here's the input to the main stem. Here is the phase three input from the football fields and so forth. This is the sum of the inputs of all the loadings for a major storm. You can see here 20 kilograms per hectare per day under these storm events. And here is the output. So you can see this is the drop here. It's about a 68% drop once these systems were in place. And again, this is going from phase 1, 2, and 3. Phosphorus is not as impressive. We got the main input from all this. You got the phase 3 input, the total input, and then you got the drop. It's more in the 26-28%. One other aspect of this is what was happening in the storm. There's been some arguments. Does it all come out in the storms? Does it come out during base flow? And here you can see a calculation of mass flux by hydrograph phase at Sandy Creek between WT1 and period between August of 2008 and a year's worth of data. So here's base and here's storm flow for total nitrogen, total phosphorus. The upshot of it is 86% of the nitrogen and 84% of the phosphorus comes out in the storm events. Some people are arguing that base flow was the most important in urban systems. In this system and some of the other systems we've looked at, you can see here that when it's trickling down through in July and August, we're only getting a small percentage. So if you're not capturing storms when the chocolate milk is coming down, you're not capturing most of the stuff coming through the system. So let's take a look at storms, and the last part of this is, here's Dr. Flanagan, who was one of the co-authors with Dr. Ho, and essentially, here's the water. I like to show this to the state agency. They like this better than any of the data. Here's the water coming in and working its way through the system, and you can see it's getting lighter and lighter as it comes out to the outflow system, so we're obviously dropping a lot of sediment. We put in 40-some feldspar markers. Here's the inflow. Here's the outflow dam system, and we have these all over the place. And this is a weighted interpolation of the feldspar markers. And the accretion rates you can see here from 2006 to 2010, we're holding a fair amount. We have some hot spots here on some of the wetland areas, especially as it floods in here and overflows this area, overflows some of these lower wetland areas. And if you put that data together, we're accreting in the lake about 1.8 centimeters, in the riparian area about 1.1 centimeters per year. And if you look at the tonnage, it surprised us. We thought the reservoir would hold most, but actually 400, roughly, metric tons is being stored in the floodplain. So it's a lot of sediment. So I'll finish up with saying that's the chemistry, and I'll just only show you, does it make any difference when you improve that water quality? And if you look at the macroinvertebrates, you would see that we've actually gone from the pre-34 taxa to over 101 taxa and various groups. So the water quality's improved there. Does it improve the diversity of plants and birds? I'm going to show you 101 plant species in great detail. I know you want to see those. And there they are. So, and there are some of the birds that we actually find in the area. So, in summary, We've reduced nitrogen by 64%, TP by 28, reduced significant coliform. We have improved the hydrology on the system. We're capturing almost 500 metric tons of sediment each year from Durham and the campus. We've increased macroinvertebrates by 3, and we've now got over 100 plant species and birds, and these are the agencies that funded it. So thank you very much. And I couldn't do this without all these grad students and people.
Please take a
That's funny you mentioned that, because I have my crew is frantically working away on that very question, and so we've got a whole series of gas wells in right now, and we hope by next year we've got them on by age, by different treatment, and we're looking at the three major gases right now, because that is a really important question. We've done some preliminary work, and we've had some variability, and so now we're going to have to do a real spatial analysis to see. We've got a few sites where it's low. We've got a couple that are astronomical, and I think it's a spatial heterogeneity problem, because some of these areas were disturbed when they built them. So we're really going to try to get a really good handle on it. That's a really good question. That's a really good question, and I'm now on the Executive Committee for Facilities. I'm one of the few professors. My colleagues think that I'm completely crazy. They said, look, I'm far enough along in my career. I'm in my silver years. It won't make any. They said, you won't get anything out of this. Well, the university is putting now $100,000 a year to my lab to do the water budgets, because we don't have any more funding from EPA, since apparently EPA doesn't have any money anymore. But we have gone with a facilities group to cut their fertilizer and herbicide use by almost 40%. We're trying to do a better job on that. And Duke is going to a stormwater plan. This is an integral part of their entire stormwater plan. I'm on that board. We have a sustainability plan for energy and now water. And I have a student who's studying 1,500 campuses across the U.S. He's just about to finish. Duke is one of the case studies. But so our facilities people and our chancellor for all facilities, he uses this now as an example. It's taken me 10 years, but they are on board. They really want to do something major on this, and they want to have they want to reduce their footprint for water quality, and in terms of improve the water quality. So that's been a major breakthrough, actually, which apparently is not. According to my student survey, we just got 50% of the campuses have never even thought about their water, what they do with it. It just goes through, flows through. All they know is they have drinking water and they have a sewer that works, but they don't know anything about their water plan whatsoever. And there's going to be some major problems coming about as a result of that. I know two universities that are under lawsuits because of poor water quality. So
it's time for a break. Let's give Kurt a hand.